The 26th of March, 2024. A heavily loaded container ship careers out of control and hits the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore.
The whole bridge just fell down. The whole bridge just collapsed.
It literally took my breath away. It just didn't look real.
Key Bridge is down. Several vehicles in the water.
Six highway workers are killed. And thousands of tons of steel and concrete block this vital North American port.
In the military, I'd seen my share of twisted metal, but I've never seen anything like this.
People are looking at us and saying, "What's the plan?"
The scale of the salvage operation is daunting. They need to reopen this crucial shipping route as quickly as possible.
You could instantly feel the ripple effects on our economy, on Baltimore.
We knew that it was going to be very dangerous, very complex.
It'll certainly make your hair stand up on the back of your neck, seeing the steel drop as you're making cuts.
Investigators must uncover what went wrong. How did a modern ship suffer such catastrophic loss of control?
If this event had happened 30 seconds earlier, 30 seconds later, you probably don't have the collapse of the Key Bridge.
This could have been prevented.
The Port of Baltimore, Maryland, is one of the busiest ports on the east coast of the United States. Every year, it handles cargo worth more than 60 billion pounds and supports more than 20,000 jobs.
My name is Wes Moore, and I'm the 63rd governor of the state of Maryland. So much of Baltimore's identity is actually wrapped up in its port. The Port of Baltimore has been one of the earliest trade points for not just the state, but for this country. I mean, that port is our economic heartbeat in the state of Maryland.
Baltimore is the closest port to America's Midwest. It supplies a third of the country with critical goods, from food to pharmaceuticals. The port has 17 separate terminals for container operations, cruise ships, and bulk cargo. 2,000 vessels dock here every year. It can handle some of the world's largest ships, carrying more than 15,000 containers. To reach the port terminals, all ships must pass under the 1.7-mile-long Francis Scott Key Bridge, which carries four lanes of road traffic across the bay. They sail through a narrow shipping channel that runs between the central piers of the bridge.
From a practical perspective, the Key Bridge gets you to the Port of Baltimore. But it's so much more than that. It's our skyline, the backdrop for Baltimore.
In the early hours of Tuesday, the 26th of March, 2024, there are 11 cargo ships docked in Baltimore Port. At 12:36 a.m., one of these sets sail for Sri Lanka with 21 crew on board. It's called Dali, a 100,000-ton, 300-meter-long ship registered in Singapore. The vessel is almost full, laden with 4,700 containers of everything from soybeans to perfume. As the ship approaches the bridge, there's a sudden loss of electrical power. The ship is plunged into darkness. At 1:27 a.m., the pilot on board sends out an alert.
Hold all traffic on the Key Bridge. There's a ship approaching that just lost their steering.
I'm holding traffic now. I was dragging, but we stopped prior to the bridge.
We had workers on that bridge. These are people who are fixing potholes. They were fixing potholes while we slept.
Just make sure no one's on the bridge right now. If there's a crew out there, you might want to notify whoever the foreman is, see if we can get them off the bridge temporarily.
If my phone rings in the middle of the night, it's not a good thing. I'm Pete Buttigieg, U.S. Secretary of Transportation. My phone rang, of course, with staff alerting me to the situation unfolding in Baltimore.
Once you get here, I'll go grab the workers on the Key Bridge and then stop the outer loop.
My chief of staff, he sent me a note saying, I just sent you a video. The video was of the bridge collapsing, and it literally took my breath away. It just didn't look real. A container ship, literally the size of 3 football fields, had slammed into the Key Bridge and took this bridge down almost instantaneously. We knew that one of the most tragic moments in our state's history had just occurred.
That's the Key Bridge.
Yeah, it is.
Wow.
Coast Guard and police search teams race to the scene.
The whole bridge has collapsed, and the bridge is sitting on top of the container ship.
We started searching almost instantaneously because our station was very close. My name is Captain David O'Connell, commander for Sector Maryland, which oversees all Coast Guard forces in the state of Maryland.
It's a container ship.
It wasn't immediately clear what we were dealing with, how many people had been impacted, how much of the bridge had been destroyed.
You could just get us near where the other fire department assets are out there.
Got it.
Could anybody have survived who went into the water? At the time, we were hearing conflicting reports of how many of those workers were on the bridge.
Key Bridge is down. It was last reported at least several vehicles in the water, and several people still unaccounted for.
It was nighttime. It was a fairly clear night, though, so they could see. They had visibility. They had lights as well.
Hey, what's going on, man?
We got one out of the water.
Okay.
There was one survivor that went into the water in his vehicle, and he was clinging to a piece of debris when he was picked up.
They're bringing the victim in now.
Okay.
Incredible that somebody would survive that fall and be rescued. It gave hope to the rescuers that we were going to find other victims as well that survived the fall.
343, sir. I have nothing at the moment.
6 highway workers are still missing. First light reveals the full scale of the disaster.
As we were turning and rounding that corner, you got a chance to see for the first time up close what was going on.
Got it. Natural 1 to command.
The container ship, Dali, had so much momentum, it completely destroyed one of the main piers that held up the Key Bridge. Almost 1,000 meters of the crossing has collapsed into the Patapsco River.
We've got some investigators on board with me in the area of the bridge.
45,000 tons of steel and concrete completely block the main shipping channel and shut down the port of Baltimore. What caused Dali to hit the bridge, and why did this trigger such a catastrophic collapse?
There is no being a mayor nor county executive nor congressperson that prepares you for that kind of devastation.
Never seen anything of that magnitude before. I am Colonel S.T. Pinchason, commander of the Baltimore District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. We had the bridge collapse with the vessel, everything mangled up on top and around. You had these big, large spans that were just laying in the water. You see 4-inch steel that's been bent. Bent. How can you even start to think about the force?
The force is
Dali is trapped by the wreckage. The vessel has run aground next to the destroyed pier that supported the bridge. No ships can get in or out of the port of Baltimore. The shutdown will delay deliveries, impact the wider economy, and cost the port almost £12 million each day.
I remember speaking with the person who was running the operations from the Coast Guard. And I said, what is the probability that we're going to find someone alive at this point? And the answer that he gave was, Governor, my professional assessment is zero. There's a 0% chance. I remember one of the family members who said, quiero el cuerpo, which is, I want the body.
Looking at us and saying, what's the plan?
The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the U.S. Coast Guard bring in the Navy and three specialist salvage teams.
The number one priority was recovering the missing personnel. The number two priority was opening the channel.
Clearing the ship and bridge from the waterway will be a huge challenge. It calls for a rapid response of unprecedented scale. The team must free Dali from the 4,500-ton bridge section that pins down its bow so they can tow the vessel away. They must also cut the collapsed sections of bridge into smaller pieces and lift them from the river. 45,000 tons of mangled steel and concrete before they can fully reopen the port.
And you just think, how? How are we going to? I'm Robin Bianchi. I'm the assistant salvage master for Don John Marine. Seeing it on the news, seeing it in photos, I was not prepared to see it, you know, up close and personal.
Robin and her salvage team are brought in to clear the bridge wreckage from the main shipping channel.
This is going to be a hell of a cleanup.
And it was just so unfathomable, the amount of damage and wreckage and how massive everything was. And we instantly knew, well, we can't make any plans on how to raise this wreckage out of the water until we know what it looks like under the water.
You needed to have divers go down and confirm if these steel members were connected or were they just laying on top of each other.
They're entering a very inherently dangerous situation.
You have the hangar, go back to the hangar part.
Like, there was no visibility, so I kind of compared it to a metal jungle gym underwater, right? You have this rusty metal jungle gym that was plopped into zero visibility. You turn off all the lights in the room, try and tell me all the pieces of where they connect of that metal jungle gym. Oh, and by the way, the jungle gym's completely twisted and looks nothing like it did when it was built to perfection.
How far from the first gusset that you just left?
Maybe about 6 foot.
Okay.
You want to really meticulously guide them through. All right, when you have your hand on this section, we're going to call this section J. So I'd have them mark it with a little underwater marker, and that correlated to section J on this specific engineering plan.
Can you see the other side of that pendant? Is it disconnected?
Yeah, it looks still connected to a beam, like a truss.
We were able to kind of map out what it looks like underwater. You verify and validate with comms, and then you move on to the next objective.
So how much do you have exposed from the mud line to the top of the gusset plate?
Stand by, I'll grab the tape.
It was very dangerous for divers because you turn left and you went underneath something like a piece of rebar that's sticking out. You have to remember that that's where you have to come back out, otherwise you could become trapped. everything that could make diving more difficult, it was on this job.
With visibility so poor, the team decides to use underwater drones equipped with sonar to map the wreckage. The scans will help the team decide where to cut and lift each section of debris.
This volumetric sonar uses very precise location data from various scans to essentially stitch together multiple scans to create a 3D model. The picture spoke 1,000 words. It just gave a really just high fidelity view of exactly what everyone was dealing with on the bottom.
What we didn't realize until we were able to get some 3D imagery of just how catastrophic the collapse was.
While the salvage teams prepare their work plans, an investigation begins that will establish what caused the ship to collide with the bridge and why the structure collapsed so completely.
I'll never forget the shock of seeing the bridge for myself and knowing that several people who were just doing their jobs lost their lives that day. There's no way that we can move on from that without taking stock of the lessons learned. And I know that the investigation will wind up influencing everything from how we build our bridges to how we run our ships for decades to come.
Investigators board Dali on the day of the accident. They document the scene and meticulously gather physical and electronic evidence. They interview Dali's captain and 20 crew who are held on board the ship. They retrieve the ship's voyage data recorder, which stores audio from Dali's bridge and details engine and rudder commands.
For this bridge collapse investigation, we're looking at different aspects of the incident to answer how do we stop ships from losing power.
My name is Marcel Muse. I'm a marine accident investigator with the National Transportation Safety Board, and I'm assigned as the investigator in charge for the Dali accident. Assuming that we can't stop ships from losing power, how do we stop them from hitting things? Assuming we can't stop ships from hitting bridges, how do we stop them from falling down?
To answer this question, the team must study the structure of the bridge to understand how it collapsed. Its original design reveals clues. The key bridge had a massive steel truss supported by 2 main concrete piers.
The truss is what takes the load from the crossbeams that directly support the deck, and then transmit that load through those piers down to the foundation safely. So that's how the load will travel. That's the path of the load. My name is Dr. Abby Agayere, and I'm a professor of structural engineering. The forces have to be balanced. If you take away a critical element, you lose that equilibrium and the structure is going to collapse. With a key bridge, it happens almost like in a blink of an eye. It's a chain reaction, basically, that's going on. You have progressive collapse. My area of research is understanding why structures fail and how to prevent failures of structures. This is one span. This is the second span, the middle span, and this is the end span, the third span. The Dali hits the pier here. This 2-span becomes 1-span, for which this bridge was not designed. So it's stretching more at the bottom and compressing more at the top. You can see separation happening at the bottom because the tension now is much larger and there's buckling happening at the top. It collapses and starts to redistribute those forces to the other members, which those members are incapable of taking. And so the collapse is progressing, actually. It's a V shape. It's hinging here. This part has already failed. The dolly is almost acting like a support for the bridge now. And that part is going to separate. And you can see it's breaking off because of that tension. The failure is propagating to the single span that's left on the right-hand side, a typical progressive collapse scenario.
Let's take a test run on this bridge right now.
When the Francis Scott Key Bridge was opened in 1977, it was an engineering marvel, built with the third longest truss in the world. But back then, the largest container ships were only one-third the size of Dali.
There's no way that it could have envisioned that there would be a 100,000-ton ship striking the bridge.
So I've just completed the maiden voyage for Newswatch 2 across the Francis Scott Key Bridge, and starting Wednesday at 10 a.m., you'll get your chance.
We move more goods today than at any time in our history. The problem you have is the ships have gotten bigger and larger, and the infrastructure has not kept up with them. I'm Sal Mercagliano, a maritime historian. Lifespan for bridges is about 75 years. Ships, on the other hand, can last anywhere from 20 to 30 years. And so two to three different generations of ships can happen during the lifespan of just one bridge. Infrastructure can't change as fast as shipping can change.
The force from the dolly was huge. It was a huge, huge force. There's truly no bridge that I know that would be designed for 34 million pounds of impact force. So it's not surprising that it went down. What is surprising is that there was no protection of those piers. This could have been prevented.
Five days after the collision, 11 cargo ships are still trapped in Baltimore port. Hundreds more, unable to get into the port, are diverted as far south as Brunswick, Georgia, over 700 miles away. The sonar scans reveal that huge sections of the collapsed bridge are anchored deep in the mud on the riverbed. This will make the task of removing the wreckage even tougher. Engineers need special underwater equipment and floating cranes to cut and haul the metal out of the channel.
Some of those pieces were more than 1,000 tons. So we kind of had to figure out how many bites do we have to take out of this large structure that's underwater. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
Me and my team, we were responsible for everything outside of the 1,200-foot navigable channel. My name's Stephen Skippen, and I'm the project manager for Skanska USA Civil. The first thing we did is we deployed all of the cranes, 500, 400-ton cranes that would support this operation. Our next effort was to calculate weights of every truss member. We took that and we started developing work plans for each segment of the bridge.
Each bent steel beam holds a potentially lethal surprise for the workers about to cut through them. They're loaded with enormous stored energy, just like compressed springs.
As we started cutting and removing the first sections of steel, it was really challenging to figure out where the energy was stored in different members and how they would react.
That stored energy of the bridge, I like to describe it like taking a metal slinky, because it has all that energy that wants to come like this, but is held with the steel. When you cut that, all the energy is free and it'll break apart like that. And sometimes it's very dynamic and dramatic.
We have
people, crane operators, operating very close to this massive Jenga pickup sticks loaded spring of a problem where members are being cut and then they spring back. It's very dangerous.
It certainly make your hair stand up on the back of your neck, seeing the steel drop as you're making cuts.
Twenty-two floating cranes are working on site, including the largest on the East Coast, the Chesapeake 1000, capable of lifting up to 1,000 tons.
You're not just dealing with weight, you're dealing with all the forces that are working against you. There were days where we were battling specific sections due to mud suction. You have this force that wants to keep it sucked down in the mud, and you're trying to apply a force that's coming opposite of that, so you have to break that suction force. And then as you're coming up out of the water, you have all this material just hanging off, dangerous roadbed, rebar and stuff. We had to get under there with small boats and torch cut and get that off of the structure. So from start to finish, it's just a very inherently dangerous world that we live in.
There are still four highway workers missing. The salvage team hopes to recover their bodies as they remove the layers of steel and concrete.
To get out onto the water, you go past the memorial, you see all the flags from their home countries and the people that are gathered there, the families that were gathered there. When anyone was recovered, everything stopped. It was a very solemn and respectful moment. We were able to then return those people to their families.
The complexity of the salvage leaves Baltimore's main shipping channel completely blocked more than 3 weeks after the collision. Hundreds of ships are unable to dock, and 8,000 port workers are unemployed. To get commerce moving again, engineers open 3 temporary channels for smaller vessels, which restores around 15% of commercial shipping to the port.
The question was now evolving toward what's it going to take to clear that channel to get the port back up and running. We were prepared for the possibility that it would be months.
The priority is to clear a 90-meter-wide section of the deeper main shipping channel that will allow single-lane traffic for larger vessels and restore around 70% of shipping to the port. It takes almost 3 weeks to haul this wreckage from the mud.
When we opened the limited access channel and you saw the scale of the ships that we were able to bring in, we just knew that we were getting one step closer to bring Baltimore back to full functionality.
But the wreckage blocking the rest of the main shipping channel will be far more difficult to remove. A 4,500-ton bridge truss is wedged across Dali's bow.
The bridge section on the Dali was very unstable. There was bolts falling off it, pieces of steel falling off it. Taking care of the truss on the ship was going to be challenging and dangerous.
The cost of the port shutdown and supporting the unemployed port workers exceeds £12 million a day. But this is not the first time in America that a ship colliding with a bridge led to catastrophe. An incident over 40 years ago highlights the vulnerability of bridges and also shows how to protect them from ship strikes.
Officials now say at least 32 people died.
On the 9th of May, 1980, a freighter called Summit Venture collides with the Sunshine Skyway Bridge in Tampa Bay, Florida.
That tragedy happened near Tampa early this morning while hurricane-force winds lashed the Sunshine Skyway Bridge.
The Sunshine Skyway Bridge collapse was something that really shook many Americans into greater consciousness about these issues.
The ship lost its bearings in a heavy storm after its radar failed.
And as I came to the very top of the bridge here, I saw the rest of the bridge was out and applied the brakes immediately and stopped with them about 2 feet of going in.
Numerous motorists drove off the roadway after it had collapsed, resulting in 35 fatalities. We recommended that when that bridge was rebuilt, it would be rebuilt with pier protection systems designed to try and mitigate the severity of a strike to the pier.
Engineered islands protect the main piers of the new Sunshine Skyway Bridge from ship collisions. Vast underwater bollards called dolphins guard the piers that hold up the roadway.
Dolphins, they're really anchored all the way down into the seabed and filled with concrete, so they're massive. They're not pushovers. They dissipate the energy and bring the ship to a stop.
The dolphins are positioned close enough to the pier to prevent ships from veering too near, but far enough away to absorb any impact without damaging the bridge.
As a result of the Sunshine Skyway Bridge, the Federal Highway Administration put some new standards in place.
Only new bridges had to provide pier protection for the piers that are in navigable waterways. Older bridges that were built prior to then, were not mandated in any way to be brought up to code. And so they were kind of just left alone. So that's why a bridge like the Francis Scott Key Bridge was left unprotected.
In the 1970s, the Key Bridge was built with four dolphins, positioned around 150 meters from its main piers.
The dolphins were so far away from the piers that they were basically useless in terms of protecting the piers. I believe that if you had dolphins, cluster of dolphins protecting the Key Bridge, that direct heat from the Dali would not have happened. The ship would be damaged, but the bridge would have been spared. The lives would have been spared.
Maritime law is written in blood. We tend to wait for an accident to take place. It took Titanic sinking for us to come up with a convention that mandated enough lifeboats on board. It's because we can't imagine something as bad as what happens with Dolly ever happening.
Since the Francis Scott Key Bridge opened in 1977, thousands of ships have passed safely underneath.
I think about how many times we've driven over that bridge and you see the ships going through and you don't think that they're going to hit.
But this disaster had been foreseen. Between 2006 and 2016, meeting notes reveal that Baltimore's Harbor Safety Committee discussed the need for the Key Bridge to be protected from ship strikes.
There were people really stressing that there needs to be pier protection. You could have ships lose electrical power, and if they lose electrical power, they could drift and hit the piers. But the issue of cost is discussed, and it seems crazy, but nothing was done. There was a real opportunity to prevent what happened.
Dali is not even the first ship to strike Baltimore's Key Bridge. On August the 29th, 1980, a 120-meter-long cargo ship also lost power, leaving port, and slammed into the same pier that Dali would hit 44 years later.
Here's where it happened. A Japanese ship called the Blue Nagoya was heading south out of Baltimore Harbor when it rammed right into Key Bridge. As you can see, it tore off about 30 feet of planking and damaged part of the bridge's support structure.
Blue Nagoya was an extremely large ship for 1980, but it was only about a third of the size of Dali. Even so, the ship caused almost 400,000 pounds worth of damage to the Key Bridge.
The fender was badly damaged and had to be replaced. So that was a warning sign. It was something that they knew had happened before. So if it had happened before, the probability that it will happen again was always there.
On the morning of March the 26th, 2024, Dali was on course to sail directly between the main piers of the bridge.
Everything appeared perfect. There didn't appear to be any issues at all regarding navigation for the vessel. So dead calm, dead still, coming out, flat calm in the water.
But once Dali lost power, the ship mysteriously turned to the right, heading straight for the bridge pier. The ship's data recorder reveals that Dali loses power at 1:25 in the morning and starts to drift rudderless at 9 knots. At that time, the vessel was sailing closer to one side of the shipping channel, possibly causing pressure differences along the ship's hull that may have pushed the bow to the right. At that precise moment, the ship passes the mouth of a tributary, whose currents may have pushed the stern to the left and set the ship on a collision course with the bridge pier. With no propulsion to correct its course, the 100,000-ton juggernaut was now only seconds from disaster.
If they lost power 30 seconds earlier, 30 seconds later, you probably don't have the collapse of the Key Bridge. 30 seconds earlier, this ship may have sideswiped the pylon. It may have gone aground inside the bridge. 30 seconds later, it may have coasted under the bridge and not hit it.
The most important thing is to prevent a ship strike like that from happening in the first place. It should never happen at all. And so that means making sure that the shipping side and the engineering side have as many safeguards as possible to prevent that kind of occurrence.
In the U.S., only new bridges built since 1991 are required to have pier protection, and retrofitting it to older bridges is expensive. 60 miles northeast of Baltimore, operators of the Delaware Memorial Bridge are spending £70 million to install pier protection.
The Delaware River has a vessel traffic of approximately 2,400 ships a year. Many of those are going to be the same size as the one that struck the Key Bridge. And our goal is to make sure that none of them strike our bridge. Vessels have gotten much bigger. So we've now got to put something in that is capable of resisting the larger ships, which is the reason why we're putting these dolphins in to make sure that they never get hit.
The dolphins that we designed for this bridge are able to deflect a vessel similar to the size of the Dali that struck the Key Bridge. These dolphins are made of steel sheet pile in a ring that is filled with sand and then capped with stone. There is about 40 to 50 foot of very, very soft mud at the consistency of peanut butter that we have to drive these sheets through into the hard, solid sand and provide the strength needed to resist a ship impact.
It would cost almost £1.5 billion to replace the Delaware Memorial Bridge, more than 20 times the cost of the Dolphins.
So we look at it as a pretty good investment on our money.
The cost of bridge protection is peanuts when you come to think about the cost of replacing the bridge, the loss of lives, which you can't even put a price on, and then the economic loss.
In a typical year, the number of lives lost to airliner crashes in our country is zero. We need to pursue a similar standard for shipping, railroading, and driving. We're a long way from that in the United States today.
It's now over 6 weeks since the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed. As teams prepare to move the stranded Dali, they continue to hunt for the sixth and final missing highway worker.
The recovery never stopped until every single person was found.
To fully clear the main shipping channel, they must remove the truss pinning down Dali so they can tow the vessel away.
There's so much pressure, compressive pressure, on the beam from how it's laying. That's very dangerous if you have someone in the way and all of a sudden it's going to give way. We were determined not to have any more casualties on this site, and conducting this operation safely was paramount. So the best thing to do is to remove the human from the equation. Using controlled demolition was the fastest and safest way to conduct that many cuts all at the same time.
The team makes cuts at critical points, but they don't fully sever the beams. Then they insert shaped charges, explosives that create high-velocity jets to slice through the steel and complete the cuts. The charges must now explode in a specific sequence so the steel falls away without damaging the hull. It's now 7 weeks since the disaster, and visa restrictions prevent Dali's crew from leaving the ship. With safety measures in place, they are moved to the stern, away from the blast.
Blast day was set. The time was set. We had a blast radius that we had to stay outside of, and, you know, a safety zone set up.
We were telling people it wasn't going to be, as you see in the movies, a big explosion, but at the end of the day, it turned out to be a pretty big explosion.
Boom, and then seeing it fall in the water, it was pretty magnificent. It was pretty cool.
Absolute pleasure.
I mean, I've never seen anything like it before.
Very glad.
But then I was thinking, all right, what do we have to do to go get this, like, out of the water?
Next to the Key Bridge, the team cuts up the wreckage into meter-long sections for recycling. It takes 8 weeks of cutting and lifting to free the ship from the metal. Now they can pump water out of the ship's ballast tanks to help raise the vessel so it can float free.
There was a fear that she would come free uncontrolled, which was not something that we wanted. If she came free at a time that we didn't want her to come free, there were still some obstructions in the waterway that we hadn't taken out that could rip a hole in the ship.
After 18 hours, they've pumped out almost 6 million liters of ballast water.
And that's when she came free and floated up, and we were able to pull her off.
A fleet of 5,000 horsepower tugs helps to haul the ship away from the devastated pier.
It was emotional. It was emotional seeing, you know, those tugs helping to escort the dolly out. And it also helped to remind you of the enormity of the dolly.
Eleven weeks after the collision, the salvage team removes the last of the wreckage to fully restore shipping to the port of Baltimore.
Seeing the first deep draft ship come through that channel, I felt like there should have been fireworks behind it, you know? It was an accomplishment for everyone.
What happened that early morning of March 26th was horrific. What happened next was inspiring. Crews have worked day and night to get this port back open in less than 100 days. The channel is open, the ships are moving, the terminals are operating, and this great American port is full steam ahead.
This highly coordinated, complex salvage operation finally enables the Port of Baltimore to reopen. It cost almost £80 million to clear the wreckage. A number of lawsuits against Dali's owners allege that poor maintenance and cost-cutting caused the ship to lose power and hit the bridge. The ship's owners reject these allegations, but if settled, Lloyd's of London estimates that the total claims could be over £3 billion. Now, investigators must find out what caused Dali to lose power and crash.
Why the ship lost power is absolutely the focus of the investigation. We want to prevent this from happening again. Ships are complicated. They need electrical power to run a variety of systems, including propulsion and steering and navigation.
On the night of the crash, Dali was running two of its four power generators. Together, they produce over 8 megawatts of electricity to power nearly everything on the ship, including the fuel and water pumps for the main engine and the hydraulics of the steering mechanism.
Ships generate a great deal of electricity to run, and much like your own house where you have circuit breakers to ensure that if there is a disruption or a problem, they'll trip, ships have them too.
The investigation discovers a loose cable, which the lawsuits claim is shaken loose by engine vibrations, causing a power surge that trips two breakers, disrupting the electrical power supply. The system should have automatically switched to a secondary circuit. But allegedly, the control was set to manual, so did not automatically switch, causing a blackout across large parts of the ship. The pumps required to run the main engine and the steering all shut down, which kills the propulsion and locks the rudder in place.
When they were about 3 ship lengths away from the bridge, the ship lost power.
Having sailed for many years on a ship, I can tell you that the worst sound you ever hear on a ship is silence. When everything goes quiet and dark, it is the worst feeling, because at that moment you realize you don't have control of the ship anymore. It is a nightmare scenario to be up on a ship when it loses power in close quarters. You have a very short period of time in which to try to restore power. From the time period that Dali lost power till it hit the bridge was 4 minutes.
A small emergency generator kicks in, and the crew closes the tripped breakers. The ship's lights come back on, but the engine is still offline.
When the ship goes dark, the main propulsion engine of the ship also cuts off. It's not getting the fuel, the lube oil, the water. You basically have stalled that engine. You would have to clean out the pistons, reestablish the correct mixture inside all the pistons to get a restart of the main engine. It's a very long, laborious, difficult process. It is not as easy as just turning a key and you get your engine up and running again.
As the crew struggles to restart the engine, there's a second blackout. Investigators discover that the generators cause this outage. Lawsuits claim that after the first blackout, the pump supplying the generators with fuel shuts down. And even when the power comes back on, this pump does not restart automatically. Now, lacking fuel pressure, the generators could be running erratically, creating power fluctuations that trip the breakers and cause the ship to go dark again.
They never were able to get propulsion going again. After the second blackout, the ship was about 1.6 ship lengths away from the bridge.
Ship blackouts happen surprisingly frequently. On average, over 5 large vessels lose power every week in the US alone. Fortunately, few of these result in collisions.
Most of the time, these blackouts occur at sea, when the ship is sailing out in the ocean. It takes a bit of time to find the underlying cause that is creating the fault. And as Dolly was approaching the Francis Scott Key Bridge, the one thing that crew did not have was time on their hands.
In a last-ditch attempt, the crew tries to power up the bow thrusters and drops an anchor. But the thrusters are offline, and the brake to lock off the anchor cannot be applied.
By the time the anchor was dropped, they were coming up on top of the bridge. The crew member on the bow had to evacuate before Dolly hit the bridge.
The ship slowly drifted to starboard, and they contacted Pier 17 of the bridge.
Seven weeks after the bridge collapse, the National Transportation Safety Board, the NTSB, released their preliminary report. The report reveals the night of the accident was not the first time that Dolly had experienced blackouts.
The NTSB is aware of a blackout on Monday, the 25th, the day before the incident, while the ship was loading cargo in Baltimore.
An engineer mistakenly closes a generator exhaust valve. This stalls the generator and trips the breaker, causing the ship to black out in port the day before the crash.
Another generator automatically came online. That restored power.
But low fuel pressure then causes this generator to stall, triggering another blackout in port. Before Dolly leaves the next morning, electrical power is rerouted. The generator had been supplying power to the ship via transformer number 2. When recovering from the blackouts in port, power is rerouted via transformer number 1. This circuit has not been used for months. It has the loose cable that's claimed may have caused the fateful blackout the following morning.
I know the journey of healing for Baltimore is going to be a long road. I know that for those families who lost individuals, this is a burden they will feel for the rest of their lives.
6 lives were lost in the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. But the accident could have been far worse.
You have to remember, this didn't happen during rush hour in Baltimore when that bridge has hundreds, if not thousands, of people going over it.
When Dolly first lost power, one of the ship's pilots put out a distress call. Maryland police were controlling traffic around a lane closed off for the road workers, so immediately began to shut down bridge traffic.
Cars would have kept coming had they not stopped traffic. And by the time the people driving the vehicles would have realized the bridge was gone, it just would have been too late. I can't tell you how many lives they saved because the answer is countless.
The last moving vehicle cleared the bridge just 40 seconds before Dali brings it crashing down.
As this case demonstrated, sometimes a few seconds could make all the difference, and lives hang in the balance.
We got a call, I mean, like, probably a minute, if that, before it hit it.
Unfortunately, the police were unable to reach the highway workers to warn them of the danger.
My first immediate thought is, did they get timely notification to evacuate? That still need to be investigated. But we can do better to reduce the tragedies like this. We are trying to model different types of technologies with this large infrastructure system so they become smarter.
Emerging technologies may help save lives in the future. Pre-collision detection systems could automatically shut a bridge and trigger an evacuation well before disaster strikes.
They utilize different types of sensors, like LiDAR, radar, and these AI-based video monitoring system. When ships start to approach the bridge, a system can automatically identify the ship, the speed, the distance. It has the real-time environmental information, water flow, the current speed, the wind speed. So it can keep updating the risk of potential collision between the bridge and the ship so that they can react earlier before the tragedy really occurs. If we have this flashing alarm, at least we can stop the traffic, evacuate the people on the bridge.
It's expected to cost around £1.5 billion to replace the Key Bridge.
For the design of the new Key Bridge, we can consider a more sustainable and effective bridge monitoring system. We need to learn from these lessons so that in the future, we can prevent the occurrence of this kind of tragedy.
Key Bridge was about a half century old. In that half century, there have been profound changes to shipping.
In 1977, very few people foresaw a ship the size of Dali.
What we've seen is kind of the exponential increase in the amount of goods we move by sea. Bridges and safety measures have to keep pace with the way we're changing ocean shipping.
An estimated 1,500 U.S. bridges remain at risk of ship strikes, including the 72-year-old Chesapeake Bay Bridge, just 20 miles south of Baltimore.
We can't let our old bridges be sitting docks. We can't just leave them unprotected. Structure our pier protection. Having tugboats lead the ships, but doing something, not just sitting and waiting and hoping that nothing happens.